All right, everybody, buckle up. Welcome in, Gun Talk Hunt. Today's Gun Talk Hunt is brought to you by ATN Optics, the future of optics, and Timney Triggers, made in the USA since 1946, I think. Also, talking about Timney. You've been installing some Timney triggers lately, KJ.
I've been installing more. I've installed probably more Timney triggers than Timney has lately, I swear.
Is it? But people want to – that's a thing, right? We always say if you install a Timney or any type of good trigger, it'll help you. But people go, is it hard to install?
No. Absolutely not. If you're looking to, and I'm no gunsmith. I'm the first to take guns apart, and then not be able to put them apart back together. So
you can do it,
but if I can do it,
yeah.
I mean, you can, and then you're not lying. It immediately improves your trigger press.
Yeah.
I mean, immediately. It just smooths it out. There's no creep in it. I do love them.
All right. So check them out at TimneyTriggers.com and Springfield Armory. Guess what, hunters? They just excited. Brought out your gun, the new Waypoint rifle. It's the 2020 model, and we just used it on an antelope hunt.
Two antelope hunts.
Yeah, and really liked it.
I loved it. It's lightweight. It's weighing in around like 6.9 pounds.
Yep.
Carbon fiber wrapped barrel, carbon fiber stock, their new 2020 action, which is silky smooth.
Yeah. Two shots. Two antelope.
Well, I could have Daniel and Goliath mine at 25 yards. So, 20, but yours.
What's the holdover on 25 yards with that 6.5 Creedmoor?
Well, we've got the guy who can answer that for
us. Yes, we do. So let's bring him in. Jeff Hoffman, Black Hills Ammo. Welcome in.
Hey, welcome, guys. Thanks for having me.
We started doing this before we even hit record is anytime we get to talk to Jeff, we just start asking questions. It's like you got the guru of ammo and bullets and ballistics and you go, ooh, 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 ooh.
Yeah.
Jeff, about this? What about that?
And a common question that always comes up across all platforms is, and you get it, I'm sure Jeff gets it. What is the best big game hunting cartridge out there and where can I find it at?
I think the best cartridge is the rifle, the one your rifle is chambered with that you shoot the most with. You know, for a long time, the only rifle that I had that I could afford to shoot was a .223. So I shot everything with it and it worked just fine, even though a lot of people, of course, are going to say that that's not really a big game cartridge. You know, I shot it a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, I wore the barrel out on that gun. When you shoot a rifle a lot, you get good with it, and that's the one you ought to hunt with. What I learned with that is .223 works good as long as you got a deer broadside within 200 yards standing there, and you put it right behind the shoulder. He doesn't know that you just didn't hit him with a .30-06.
Right.
But that's obviously not the best rifle cartridge for everybody, but it was for me because that's what I could afford to shoot.
Well. Yeah, a 55 grain or whatever, maybe it's you use something a little bit heavier, 60s to 70 grain bullet going 3,000 feet. When it goes through both lungs or your heart, you're not going to run off, not that far.
It's a long recovery process. Yeah. I mean, you're not going to recover immediately.
Yeah.
But no, we had kind of started discussing this before we hopped on the air, and I love the .22-250 for and I don't know what
deer.
It is. For deer. I love it. Deer, coyotes.
That's his Oklahoma coming out, Jeff.
It is.
I mean, I just feel like, .22-250 for deer because you shoot it well.
I shoot it a lot.
Yeah.
I shoot it for hogs. I shoot it for coyotes. And Jeff's right. It's not the ideal round.
And some places
– you have to pick your shot with that rifle. You have to put it in the right place because the bullets for a .22-250 typically aren't designed for deep penetration. They're typically more varmint bullets. So you got to pick your shot. It's not the right rifle for everybody, but if it works for you because you shoot it a lot and you're willing to pick your shot, wait for the right moment, that there's nothing wrong with that. As long as the guy understands, you got to limit yourself. You got to have some judgment there on waiting for that deer to give you the right presentation.
Now, if you are in a state that will let you hunt with a .22 caliber bullet, because not all states will, what type of bullet would you recommend, Jeff? I mean, because I guess just right off the bat, I'm going, don't just take a 55 grain, you know, full metal jacket out for deer.
If you're talking 223 or 5.56, which let's pick one caliber at a time, the new monolithic bullets are really good. The Hornady GMX bullets, the Barnes X bullets. Mm-hmm. And it took a lot of convincing for me, because when they first came out, I thought, oh, copper's harder than lead. You couldn't get those things to open up with a hammer. And I was so wrong.
Yeah.
Those things, it's amazing what you can do with machining. They machine those bullets so that they're just waiting to pop open, but yet they won't, if you run them within the right window that they were designed for velocity, they mushroom out fully. They don't blow the pedals off. They retain a lot of weight. They penetrate deeply. They're just amazing bullets. For 5.56, 223, hunting deer, I'd recommend one of the monolithic bullets, you know. And the amazing thing is, with a monolithic bullet, the solid copper bullets, you don't have to have as heavy of a bullet, because you're not losing anything due to fragmentation.
Right.
So a 55 or a 60 grain bullet, a 62 grain bullet, works good in 223, 5.56. You'll still get 18 inches of penetration out of selecting the right bullet.
Because you have, you know, what, like 90, 95% weight retention, something like that.
That or 100%.
Or, yeah. Yeah.
In shooting gel, you know, obviously there's no bones in gel. And you hit bones, you're going to have more problems with it's harder on the bullet. But in bare gel, normally it's 100% weight retention. We wow. pull it out, and if it started at 62, it still weighs 61 point something.
Wow. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But that's a good point, and especially bringing up the 5.56, because more guys are starting to get used to hunting with the MSR, the modern sporting rifle, and youth especially.
That may be the first gun that they ever shot, whether they were in the military or people are just starting out that way because it's so popular.
You know, it again goes back to what the guy is comfortable with. If he learned to shoot for the first time in the military and that's what he's used to shooting, that's the rifle for him, because that's how he knows. The old saying, beware the man with one rifle, because he probably knows how to use it.
Yes, absolutely. Now, you've done a lot of hunting and used a lot of things. And this, it's funny, we start out with favorite bullets, favorite cartridges, calibers, that kind of thing. But I feel like if you hunt enough, you start realizing that maybe perhaps we worry about that part too much and not about the bullet placement or picking right. your shot. Because there's a lot of that these days too, with the longer, being able to shoot longer range doesn't necessarily mean that you should shoot the critter at long range.
Are we opening this can of worms?
Oh gosh. Here we go.
Are we?
We can do that. I'm comfortable with that. You know, I was a sniper for 27 years, so I practiced a lot shooting everything from zero to as far as I could possibly hit stuff. And on a E silhouette representing like a human torso, a shot at 600 yards is typically about a 95% shot. As long as the target's stationary, you're stationary, you got a relatively predictable wind, that's about a 95% shot. So you could say, well, I can shoot deer at that range, right, Jeff? The problem is the time of flight to 600 yards is 8/10 of a second. So you can do everything perfectly shooting at a deer. You're nice and steady. There's no wind. The deer is just standing there grazing. You pull the trigger and the deer takes a step right at that instant. Mm-hmm. When the bullet arrives there 8/10 of a second later, you're now trailing a gut shot deer. So there's a difference between shooting stationary, inanimate stuff. And if you miss, you just adjust and say, well, I was pretty close there. I hate chasing wounded deer. I've done it.
Amen.
Don't like to do it. So for me, my personal limitation is it's got to be really a big deer. I got to really want it, and the conditions got to be perfect for me to go over about 400 yards.
And this is somebody who shoots all the time.
All the time. Has a long range shoot, like within walking distance. Right. I mean, yeah. And see, that's my problem. And he hit on it. How many rounds has he sent down range? And he still limits himself.
Right.
Where these guys go out, they might shoot long range a couple times a year. They aren't doing it on a consistent basis. And then they're going out and shooting these long ranges.
Right.
You know, you might sit there and practice in Kansas or Nebraska or South Dakota or wherever it is on flat range. and be like, man, I'm solid out at 700 yards. Perfect time to go to Colorado.
Right. Yeah.
And start shooting game at long range. It drives me nuts.
And then you've got angles and all these other things to contend with as well. So Jeff, I was talking the other day and I heard that you have kind of a weird hunting story that came up. Was a couple of years ago?
Yeah, 2 years ago.
So what's the deal with this deer that you didn't shoot?
Well, we collected this deer, I won't spoil the ending of the story on it. I was hunting with my daughter and her future husband at that time, and my niece, and the two girls decided, well, we're going to walk up this draw, and I was with Britt, my future son-in-law, and we were sitting side by side, and we thought, well, we'll just hang around. They shoot something. We'll go pick it up for them and haul it out for them. And so they hike off, and we're sitting there, and Britt says, you know, I think there's a deer over in this hillside. I go, really? So we glass. He said, yep, there's a deer. It's a doe. And I said, well, where there's does, there's sometimes bucks. Let's go over look. So we drove up to the opposite hillside, pulled up, and it was about 400 yards off, and we're glassing. And he says, there it is. And I go, yeah, you're right. Looking at it, and pretty nice buck. And we're glassing it. And we sit there for about 15 minutes. And, you know, he's my future son-in-law, but he doesn't really know how to take me. And he looks over at me and says, aren't you going to shoot that deer? I said, no. And so I didn't expound on that any. We just sat there for a while. And then later on, we had radios that were talked to the girls, and they said, well, we're done. Wasn't anything up here. We're ready for pickup. And so we go pick them up. And at that point, I told them, I said, ladies, there's over the top of this ridge, over this next draw here, there's a pretty nice buck that was laying there. You might go see if he's still there. And so they took off hiking and hunting, and we're sitting waiting, and we're not hearing any shots. And they come walking out of the draw, and they said, yeah, there's some deer up there, but there wasn't any big buck up there. So we go, oh, he must have slipped out on us somehow. So we hop in the side-by-side, and we decide we'll go try a different area. So we drive up to a big flat with big dog town up there, and there's a big flat on top and rough country all around it. And we stop, get out, and we see there's a buck down there. Matter of fact, there's several bucks down there and some does, and these bucks are starting to fight. So we're grabbing rifles and binoculars and rangefinders and popping bipods down and watching them.
That's always so neat when you get to see that, being out there to see them start fighting.
How many people get to see that? And it gets stranger. So we're watching these two bucks fight. There's one good sized buck, and he wasn't a 200 class buck, but he was a nice buck, maybe 175, 180, somewhere in there. Nice
buck. He just calls that nice. That's the giant.
He's a nice buck, and he's fighting this littler buck, and they clash, they lock horns, drive down into the dirt, and then the little one disengages, swings around, and hooks the big guy in the side and hits him hard enough. He stands him on his nose. So this deer is antlers and nose down, feet straight up in the air. And this little guy drives him down into the ground and backs up. And when the big buck stands up, I can see, even at that range, I can see blood coming out his side. I thought, oh, we're going to have to shoot this wounded deer. We can't have a wounded deer running off. He just made our choice for us. We're going to have to harvest that one. Little ninja buck didn't give us a chance. He knocked that big buck down and proceeded to push him around like a soccer ball over a 100-yard area down on the bottom of the meadow there.
Wow.
And so when we finally get down there, and this deer is just piled up deader than hell.
Wow.
And, I thought, well, what are we going to do with this deer? I thought, and he's piled up. I got a picture of him. I should show you guys, but he's got one leg hooked behind his horn. He's got a mouthful of weeds where he's trying to grab weeds to hang on while that little buck was pushing him around. He's just in a pile. And, I thought, well, we could call the Game Fish and Parks, but it's going to spend a couple hours for him to get out here, and then we got to go find him and show him where we're at, and then they're just going to take the deer. I thought, well, I'll just put my tag on him.
Yeah.
Put the tag on him, and my daughter, Rihanna's looking down at him and says, you know, it was just his day to go. Because, you know, why she said that? that was the first deer that we saw that we were looking at. I said, that's that same deer. We were looking at that. That's the same rack that we were looking at. Yeah. And so I passed on him. The girls didn't see him. And then an hour or two later, he runs into this ninja buck that just wow. ends his day. And so Rana says, well, I guess it was just his day to go. So what? My daughter made me we had a picture of that, and she had a plaque made that says his day to go and the date and the people that were there. And I had that deer made into a mount. We're going to put that plaque underneath it. And even though we didn't shoot it, it's still a cherished trophy.
That is a great story.
That's incredible.
And let that be a lesson to all our young listeners out there and viewers out there. It's not about the size of the dog in the fight. It's about the size of the fight in the dog.
No kidding.
Jeez.
So, yeah, it's not always the case that the big buck beats up on the little buck.
Just
you think that whenever you see them fighting or you hear about them fighting or you see it on TV, they're just clashing and locking horns. You think it's a big pushing match. Oh, no. Sometimes they get plumb serious.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know there's a picture going around on the interwebs of this buck standing out, and it looks like he's about to jump like a hog wire fence into a feeding pen type deal. Mm. And he's sitting there looking straight on into the camera, and hanging from his horns is the head of another buck.
Oh my gosh.
So I mean, like, wild things happen. If you spend enough time out in the woods, you get to see these amazing events that Jeff, you're right, not many people get to experience something like that.
Nature doesn't play around. So Jeff, when you guys, I'm assuming you guys clean the buck and stuff, I mean, you could tell what kind of damage was done, I guess, right?
Oh yeah, when we gutted him out, and you could see right away what killed him. He had a lacerated liver. When that little buck hit him in the side, it punctured through and got his liver. And then when we took him back later on and skinned him out, it was amazing. That side of the buck looked like you shot it with a 12 gauge with double eyed buck.
Yeah,
really? That's what it looked like.
Tons of punctures.
Yeah, man, a good hit with double-eyed buck is what it looked like.
Man, what these bucks will do for the ladies, I'm telling you. that's what it's all about. I mean, that's fighting over a woman.
That's right. Jeez.
You know, you look at it, though. They say that nothing in nature, none of those animals ever die of old age. I mean, he had a good day there. He died doing what he wanted to do. He had a nice, clean death. Fighting
yeah.
over a lady. I mean,
right.
Not a bad deal.
That's how it goes. Yeah. You know?
Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. I bet he'd like to have that one back, though.
That's incredible.
Yeah, you might reconsider that one. Say, you can have this one.
Huh? Yeah. Yeah. Move on. There's plenty of ladies out there. Come on.
It's an interesting thing. Like you said, the more you get out, we were talking about this because we just got back from this trip to Wyoming for antelope, and you just got to get out there and you see weird, unexpected stuff happened. We had an antelope run in at us. Shouldn't have. We're standing out in the open looking at him. Actually,
we had a little bit of terrain to our advantage, but essentially we were standing behind the biggest tree in the field.
Yeah, it wasn't well hidden.
Yeah.
And he just runs right towards us. We don't know why, but you know, it was one of those things. And I think it's some of the benefit of having cameras in the field, and there was a lot of hunting shows out there, is some of the stuff you wouldn't believe it if you hadn't seen it on video. Yep. Going, really?
Yeah. It's hard to explain why. I mean, I guess it's just the story of that buck. Man, it was just his day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so Jeff, changing gears, I have heard from several different ammo folks, rifle folks, whatever. And I feel like people maybe be burned out on the 6.5 Creedmoor. But back in the day, when a gun company brought out a gun, it was available in 30-06, 270, and then, you know, 308, 243.
Yep.
Basically, it's those four. And now you're seeing it. It's always first. It's in 6.5 Creedmoor. And I'm hearing from gun companies saying, number one rifle cartridge selling for many years now. I mean, are you seeing that same thing?
Yeah, it's extremely popular. I I haven't seen the numbers. You know, they keep track of it with rifle sales by caliber and die sales by caliber. It's got to be consistently in the top three. It's probably number one right now.
And people who are maybe they're not as geeked out into this as maybe you or us would be. Why is it that the 6.5 Creedmoor is just so popular ballistically?
Story there. In 1999, I went to a sniper competition and I finished middle of the pack, which is humiliating for me because I'm not a good loser. I hate losing. And one of the guys that beat me was a guy shooting a 260, which is pretty much a ballistic twin to the 6.5.
Right.
And I didn't understand it. I thought, how could this? He doesn't shoot any more than me. I don't think he's, you know, my pride speaking, I didn't think he was better than me. I thought, how did he beat me? What's his angle? What's his advantage here? And so I started studying the ballistics of the 260, again, a ballistic twin of the 6.5 Creedmoor. And the light bulb went on. I'm looking at ballistic programs and I'm realizing the drop in the drift, the drop over range and the drift in the wind is closer to a 300 Win Mag than it is a 308. So basically you've got a third less drift, which means you can make a mistake on calling the wind or the range and still be more likely to get a hit than you would with a 308.
Yeah.
Looking back, maybe he trained harder than I did, but at the time I'm looking at it saying, well, that's it. He beat me because of that rifle, but it is a definite advantage. And then you look at there is a difference between the 260 and the 6.5 Creedmoor. And the difference is the 6.5 Creedmoor is a shorter cartridge case. And so with the same overall length, so it allows you to use a longer, sleeker bullet, which a higher BC bullet. And to answer your question, a big part of the key on the popularity of that bullet is due to the performance that comes from having really high BC bullets. What I learned is a 6.5 bullet, the 260 bullet, starts off maybe a little faster than a 308, but you think, well, the 308's a much bigger cartridge. But by the time you get to 500 yards, the 260 or the 6.5 actually has more energy than a 308, which is totally non-intuitive. You look at that and say, oh, you know, you got a kid's cartridge versus a man's cartridge. What's going on here? But it's just that much more efficient. And that's the reason for its popularity. It's flat shooting. It's better in the wind. Plus, it's mild recoiling cartridge, so it doesn't beat you up. You can afford to put a lot of time practicing in without coming away bruised up.
That was one thing I noticed when we first kind of started getting into the 6.5 Creedmoor world is you heard about it being great for long distance. And for some reason, a lot of us will think, oh, it must be fast. And you go, well, no, it's not fast. And then you shoot it and you go, man, it doesn't kick a lot either because it's just like you said, it's very efficient.
Yep. I'm telling you, as far as like a hunting round, there's none better. I don't think there's a lot better than the 6.5 Creedmoor right now. Last year I was in Canada shooting the Black Hills ELDX and out walks an elk. I mean, a giant elk. They don't grow them small up there.
Right.
They got to last through some pretty tough winters up there. But one shot, and he is crumpled up in a pile right there. And that was 250 yards.
Yeah.
And, I mean, same thing with the bear.
And you'll hear this about the 6.5 as well, is they'll say it's inherently accurate. Can a cartridge be more accurate than another cartridge? I mean, or why would that be?
There's some cartridges that are just, some people use the term inherently accurate. That's kind of nebulous, but there are certain cartridges that it's just easier to get accurate loads with them. You put something together with a good bullet and a reasonably good choice on propellant, and you put it in a good rifle and it's just easy to get it to shoot.
Yeah.
223s are one of that. That's one of them. A 223 is easy to get to shoot good. 308's pretty easy with good match bullets to shoot good. And used to be that you had to say match bullets anymore. A lot of the hunting bullets are just as accurate as match bullets. The Creedmoor is one of those as well. It's just not that hard to get it to shoot well. And part of it is we're getting spoiled here because the the gun manufacturers are getting so good at building rifles. You can remember 20 years ago, if you had a minute angle rifle, most people's minute angle rifles weren't minute angle.
Right.
They'd get minute angle once out of several groups that cut it out, put it in their pocket, or they would just remember that one and pronounce forever that was a minute angle gun.
Right.
You know, in all the bolt guns that I've had, I can remember there's only one of them that I ever had that cost less than $2,000 that out of the box was a minute angle gun. One of the gun companies came out with a prototype and a gun writer had it. And he said, here, Jeff, take this. And I sat down with it. It was a 308. Well, it was a TC Warlord is what it was.
No longer in production, unfortunately.
What about that? I've never heard of that. That's because for some reason they didn't actually come out with the rifle, I don't think, after they went to all the trouble. But I laid down and I shot five consecutive half-inch groups off a bipod. With it off a bipod, five consecutive groups. Another sniper was with me. I gave it to him and he shot three out of five that were sub half groups. The reason that's, I remember that is because it's memorable. I mean, it's pretty rare to have a half minute rifle. It used to be extremely rare. Now, minute rifles, there's Ruger Americans that shoot sub minute. I mean, it's not even a topic of conversation anymore because it's just expected now.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Don't get KJ Starr on the Warlord.
Oh, that's, I wanted one so bad. And
I remember that.
There's only four out there
now. Is that true?
Well, yeah, there's four out there. But so when they didn't come out with it on the production run, a few people within the company, they were getting rid of inventory, and I know two guys who picked
scooped
up both
them
of
them. Up.
Yep. So there's four out there. So if you ever see a TC Warlord for sale, get it.
Buy it.
Buy it.
Don't ask.
Yeah.
Don't let the sun set without buying sucker.
I mean, that's just like the TC Icon. Yeah. I mean, they're not making it anymore. And if you see one out there, I mean, get it, because I've got a 300 Win Mag that loves to eat the ammo.
Yeah.
I mean, it shoots good.
Oh, yeah.
Man.
All right. So, Jeff, thanks for telling us that story. So if you ever find yourself out watching some critters fighting, you never know. You actually may see the end of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Watch it till the end.
That's incredible. Thanks for being with us, Jeff.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. That's it for us. We'll see you next time on Gun Talk Hunt.